One, two, three, four. This, my dear friends, is the Chofta. Do you want some more? Chofta, the weekly podcast with Haji Mike. Culture, music, politics, football, life. Perhaps it was destined to be so. I would never find the song. It was just one of those unresolved mysteries of life. My dad had quite a small record collection. It was a fairly mixed bag of largely 7-inch singles, the multicoloured gramophone ones released from the only record company from Cyprus to ever make 7-inch singles were largely in the Cypriot dialect. He also had a number of odd Beatles tunes, things like Obladi, Oblada, and Lily the Pink, By the Scaffold. We'll drink a drink a drink. Don't ask me how all these records came together and they ended up in a small record collection in Walthamstow in the 1960s. I could never figure that one out. But there was one song, and I never knew its title, whose melody stayed with me for life from about the age of 8. And roughly for about 50 plus years, all I could do was recall that melody. All I knew about it was an instrumental, and it had a cheesy, twangy guitar played, a very racy sort of pace. And the beat was very tropical. Didn't know where it was from. I know it wasn't a Cypriot tune, but how it ended up in my dad's record collection, I could never figure that one out. Just didn't add up. As my dad got older, he seldom played records. And as I grew older, I collected thousands of them and became a DJ. So we kind of went in opposite directions, musically, you could say. And it was a mystery to the three of us, me and my brothers, what happened to that record collection. Probably disappeared in the big move from London to Cyprus just before the year 2000, when my parents came back to live here. My dad wasn't really into music that much. I mean, he had a few records, but music for him was largely functional, and you know, he would enjoy it when he was out dancing somewhere. Dancing was really important to him, because people used to work really hard back in those days in the 60s and 70s, like most Cypriots in London, working long, hard hours in factories, making shoes or clothes, or serving people in restaurants or fish and chip shops. So people appreciated music in that functional way, and they would go to a dinner and dance or something, and or a wedding, and music would be, you know, the centerpiece, you know, as a live thing. But I don't really think a lot of our parents would sit down and listen to music. They certainly didn't buy it as compulsively as our fan-based pop music generation in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And don't forget that 70s and 80s generation, DJing and partying, if we could, it would have lasted for 8 days a week. My dad once confessed to me that he had grown to dislike singing and voices on records, vocals. I can remember when he had that conversation, and it was something to do with Migis Theodoragis. I had just seen the radical Greek composer who annoyed the dictators in Greece so much that they sent him to dreadful prisons, several of them, in remote barren islands and isolated places in Greece. When Theodoragis was freed, he played a number of concerts around the world, and one of them was at the Royal Albert Hall in London. It must have been around 1977. I know that's probably the first gig I went to, actually, as in, you know, a mass gig. I went to two gigs that year. One was Theodoragis and the other one was Santana. So Varagis played the Royal Albert Hall, and he was introduced by my famous modern Greek teacher at college, Zanetos Tofalis. I felt very proud of that, my modern Greek teacher introducing Mikis Theodoragis. So that's when my dad confessed to me that he'd gone off vocals completely, and he preferred instrumental music. Part of me thought that he was actually winding me up, but another part of me knew he was actually serious. I was getting into Stevie Wonder at that time, and my dad went off voices. I couldn't figure how that all added up. Did feel a bit surrealistic that we was going in sort of opposite directions. And then I thought about that infamous, mysterious twangy guitar song in his record collection, and it seemed to sound logical that he'd always liked instrumental music. Because whenever he used to play that song, and, you know, when I used to sort of sneak into his room and play it, and he would walk in sort of dancing this weird dance, which was a combination of the Çiftedeli and the twist. Çiftedeli belly dancing, by the way, for those of you who don't know it. Fair enough. I came to the realization from very early on that music was all about taste, and we all have our choices. So we had radically different tastes in music, me and my dad. I loved vocals. I liked instrumentals as well. But he was more into these sort of instrumental songs. My dad passed away at the end of 2012. I never saw those records again. But that melody, oh, that melody stayed in my mind. I asked a dozen people about it. Guitarists, bouzouki players, ethnomusicologists, DJs, relatives, writers, souvli jides, you name it. And all roads led to nowhere. So one fine day, I thought to myself, in this very digital internet age, where everything has become so AI and automated, where everything's at your fingertips, I'm going to scour cyberspace and find it. So the starting point, instrumental twangy guitar, could have been a ukulele or a slide guitar or a combination of both. It was quite funky sounding, but it wasn't funky. That all added up to this tropical, surfy vibe. Could the song be from Hawaii, I thought. After all, many Hawaiian songs were adapted in Hollywood movies. And my mum, like many British Cypriot mothers, loved Hawaii Five-O, and the other Greek-American detective guy, who she affectionately called Grojax, also known as Kojak, by the way. And for some reason, that song that stayed in my mind, that instrumental, had something to do with Waikiki. I couldn't figure out, and originally I thought the song was called Waikiki Beach. So that name rang a bell in my mind. There was something saying to me, it's the Waikiki song. So I searched under Waikiki, and no, that wasn't it. I searched for about a week, every day and night, surfing the midnight hours away, YouTube, music blogs, iTunes. And then something interesting happened. I got onto Spotify. Now, here things evolved a little bit, because Spotify, the only thing I like about it is playlists. Can't stand it as an artist because they hardly pay us a cent. But it's a great thing for just, you know, exploring, you know, and looking at different playlists of different kinds of music. And dozens of playlists appeared from the 1960s and 70s of Hawaiian surf music. A thousand melodies later, I'm still searching, and something weird happened, because I came across this song, which was called Hawaiian War Chant by Tommy Dorsey and his All-Stars from 1941. The melody sounded kind of like that song in my past, but there was something fundamentally wrong with it. It was a big band sound, and this song that I'd heard when I was much younger was very twangy. So I searched the title on Google, and some interesting facts transpired. This was actually a traditional song that was written by Prince William Pitt Leleo Hoku II. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name right. And he wrote this song with the original title Kaua I Ka Hua Hua I, which translates as We Two in the Spray. And it's considered one of his greatest compositions, and it dates back to the 1860s. And it was written when the prince was roughly 10 to 14 years old. Imagine that, writing this melody at the age of 14. It was recorded in 1913 by the Hawaiian Quintet. And if you look it up online, you'll find some very dusty vinyl versions of that. The song became popular around 1930 when Johnny Noble, band leader at the Moana Hotel on Waikiki Beach, transformed it into the very jazzy Tahua Wa Hawaii, better known as the Hawaiian War Chant. Now, I don't know where we went from, you know, two people in the spray, which is, you know, a very romantic theme, to the Hawaiian War Chant. That's one of the mysteries of how songs change. So this original Hawaiian lyric was actually talking about a secret meeting between two lovers in the surf. And it's quite deep when you read the lyrics in translation. But something just went cha-ching, bingo. Almost everyone, though, had covered this song, to my surprise, including The Ventures, and a totally disrespectful version by Spike Jones, who tried to vocalise the song in the most ridiculously insane way. I settled, however, for a version that I found online, on YouTube actually, called Waikiki Welcome, by a group called the Waikikis. And there it was, with that little significant intro. Sweet music to my ears, reconnecting after 50 or so years. It was just an amazing vibe finding this song. So they called the song Waikiki Welcome. It's 2 minutes 16 seconds long, of tropical, groovilicious heaven. During the 60s, the Waikikis released a lot of similar surf-based, groovy, twangy guitar tunes. Riding the popularity of those sounds, this largely studio-based Belgian band had some impressive hits in their time. And when it all clicked, I felt like a massive, unresolved mystery had been unscrambled in my life. At least now, I know what the song is called, and who it is by, and how the title changed, and who is the first person who wrote it, and who were the dozen or so people who completely mullered it and changed it and put lyrics on it, which sounds so ridiculous. Could you ever imagine putting lyrics to Zorba the Greek? It would sound terrible. Da-dum, da-da-da-da-dum. Imagine vocalising that. Just doesn't work. I think instrumentals are instrumentals, and sometimes you can adapt things if you wish. You can try. But I've got this feeling that what we're actually doing is, you know, destroying the soul of something. So, although it must be said that originally the song had vocals and it was actually a love song, and then, you know, 100 years later we hear it twanging away by some band in Belgium who were largely studio-based, as I said. So that's the mystery, perhaps. How does a traditional Hawaiian song over that period of a century get covered by a Belgian-based studio band and end up in the record collection of my Cypriot Londoner father who makes shoes? The power of music, I guess, and how it travels the globe so fluidly. And it's amazing when you think about all these different connections and what music means to different people from different parts of the world. I still think it's a fantastic song, and every time I hear it, it will always remind me of my dad. So here it is, Waikiki Welcome by the Waikikis, especially for my father, who is still doing that dance somewhere.